Welcome to the fifth podcast episode of With Students in Mind. My name is Matt Townsley, and I blog at mctownsley.net. My Twitter ID is at McTownsley, and my co-host is...
Russ Garand. I blog at russgarand.com, and that's my Twitter handle as well.
Excellent. We have a very special guest with us today. Sean, go ahead and tell us about yourself.
Yeah, no problem. My name is Sean Cornelli, and I teach with Matt, actually, at Solon High School. So just a little transparency there for you in the Matt parlance. I tweet at Think Thank Thunk, and my blog is at SeanCornelli.com. And that's
What classes do you teach, Sean, for those that may not have visited your blog?
Currently, I'm teaching... programming, calculus, and physics, but next year I will be taking on geology and bioethics as well.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Jeez. I
just found out about that.
Wow. Russ, you want to switch jobs with him there? You want to go from sixth grade up to high school science?
No, that's good. I was going to say, though, Matt, I think it's interesting that it only took episode 5 for our guests to completely outshine us. I think that's the way to go. We bring in the big hitters and let you know. I'm completely okay with that.
I'm okay with that. I'm definitely
just looking
okay
to learn
that.
Here.
Yeah, that's right.
I would just like to point out that episode 5 is also my favorite episode of Star Wars. You know, the Empire Strikes Back. So I feel like there's some sort of kind of serendipity here going on.
Oh, this is going to be a good one, I can tell already. Wow. Tune in.
And if you've read the blog, I'm just saying, there's a little Empire in me. I'm just going to put that out there.
All right, Russ, what in the world has happened since episode 4? A quick rundown, what's new in your world?
When was episode 4? I don't remember.
Oh, like
a couple of months ago?
April 22nd, a little over a month ago or something like that.
Oh, okay. Becky's reminding me that our last episode was with Eric. And so, well, not in my life, but in your life and in Eric's life, a couple of new positions since the last podcast.
Yeah, Eric is going to be a middle school principal, and I am moving to a different position in the same school district, curriculum and technology director. So I guess that's kind of a new thing.
I have a feeling, some people that matter probably heard podcast number 4. So I'm kind of waiting by the phone, so.
hey, this is like a digital resume right here, I tell ya.
Dream big.
Just send them to, that's right. All right, well, for those that may be joining us for the first time, here's a quick recap of our podcast format. We always start out with one thing we can teach you, and kind of focused around some sort of tool, sometimes digital, sometimes not. Then we have two perspectives, a topic we pick that's kind of a hot topic amongst ourselves or the guests that we bring on, and throw out some different perspectives on that. And finally, probably the part of the podcast that we're most famous for, I'd say, the people that comment or tweet us are always telling us how much they enjoy number 3, and that's our 3-minute gut check. So we're going to put Sean on the spot and ask him some question he doesn't know anything about right now, and we'll do kind of a little round robin type thing and do some 3-minute gut checks. Looking forward to that.
It's noteworthy, Matt, that I am prepared this week, so I a question already in mind, Sean, so get ready for that.
Bring it on, please.
Wow, this is a first for us. Wow, that's great. That's
stepping
great.
It up.
That's great. That's right. All right, well, let's start out with one thing we can teach you, Russ. We're going to kind of talk a little bit about this voice thread thing we learned about over the last couple weeks. Kick us off and tell us a little bit about your experience with VoiceThread.
VoiceThread, it's just voicethread.com, and it's something that I've had on my to-do list to check out and kind of figure out for a couple of months now. That's kind of how my to-do lists go. And so this was a great chance to do that, knock that off the to-do list, and also to engage in a pretty cool conversation with Rick and Becky Dufour that was kind of hosted by Bill Ferriter. And it was about their... Rick and Becky Dufour are authors and, I don't know, what do you want to call them? Gurus.
Gurus,
yes,
yeah.
On the professional learning communities. They kind of have their own model of PLCs. And it's something that my school district uses. I'm in a couple of PLCs, and it's kind of the model that we use in our district. And so what VoiceThread is kind of a multimedia conversation based around separate slides. Is that a decent way to explain it, Matt?
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, it's, you can have a conversation, think of a PowerPoint, but without as many, without as many slides, based on a typical PowerPoint. But the slides themselves could be a quote, could be a picture, could be a video, and then that's kind of the conversation starter.
Yep.
And then text, audio, video, those are the ways that you can jump into the conversation. Is that how you could kind of frame it, Russ?
Yeah. I mean, basically, I like the way you said it with the conversation starter. So there'd be a slide, like, for example, one of the slides was a quote, just a quote about differentiation. And so then people who go to the VoiceThread can read that quote and leave a comment in tons of different ways. You can leave a video comment, you can leave an audio comment, a text comment, and it just kind of, the conversation goes from there. I was really impressed with how well the conversation flowed between the different mediums, or media, I guess. Bill started it, each slide with an audio comment, and then people would chime in with a video comment, and someone would then do a text comment. And I was just impressed how the different media didn't throw people off, that people were responding to text with video and responding to video with audio, and it was cool. I really liked it a lot.
I thought the tool itself had a lot of great classroom implications. Mm-hmm. Multiple entry points. Some students are more are more ready to jump in and video themselves. Some students wouldn't want to be a little more anonymous, if you will, and just audio or type something in. And the same thing, you don't have to stick with one particular medium the entire time. I know I videoed myself once, audio a couple times, text a lot.
Yep.
So that was kind of a neat little thing. I could see putting some sort of big idea up there and just having students kind of go to town. A couple of things, though, that I kind of wrote a little mental note about was that it sometimes can be difficult to follow the longer conversations. You really have to scroll through a lot of the text and audio and video to kind of get towards the end, and it can be kind of, it just takes a little while to get to kind of the end of the conversation. It's pretty linear, if you will.
Yes, I agree with that.
Although there are aspects of moving around, but to get the conversation in context. One of the things that really helped in this particular conversation, it was, adult learners, was doing a lot of quoting. If I was saying something after your comment, I might say, Russ said, that way everyone else can kind of get an idea mm-hmm. of why I'm saying that. It seemed to help the conversation along a little bit. Russ, what about you? Like, do you see yourself using this in sixth grade? Is it a little beyond sixth graders? What do you think?
I do, actually. I've been thinking lately about things that I've kind of wanted to be able to do but haven't found the right tool for. And one thing that I really like about VoiceThread is this idea of asynchronicity. So it doesn't necessarily, like, I wouldn't have to check out all the laptop cart to have every kid with a laptop right now. It's something that I could assign and say, I'm going to put up a slide today and show them in class, and then say, by the end of the week, I want you to respond to that conversation. And they can find time in the library, during study hall, at home, whatever. It doesn't, I don't have to pull all the resources into my classroom right now to be able to do it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The asynchronous aspect really made for a really neat conversation. Mm-hmm.
It was cool. I really liked it. I mean, it's something that I'm definitely going to be using again at some point, and I thought it was a really cool way to have a conversation. I really thought it worked really well.
I think there's some really, obviously moving into the more administrative role, I think that even doing adult learning that way could be useful. I think, teaching an online class using VoiceThread as one medium of communication could be an interesting way of learning together. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Sean, are you familiar at all with VoiceThread?
Yeah, I've used it a little bit. I have my own account that I just kind of experimented with. And I think I'm going to, in physics, I'm going to have kids put up their data or graphs and have them just sort of comment on it instead of, going through the whole PowerPoint spiel or trying to videotape them. Just, for the sake of just saying, this is the only graph we really want to look at, what does it tell us, rather than having to make a whole presentation.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, so I like that a lot.
Kind of create a community around the main ideas versus kind of just doing the traditional whatever, here's a presentation type thing. I think one thing that was neat about VoiceThread is just kind of the way it's set up is it kind of forced me to at least think about what are the big ideas? It's kind of a, each slide is kind of a launching point versus just a shallow piece of information, if that makes sense. Yep. I think that was really kind of a neat thing, and it kind of actually it really goes along with the idea of digging deeper versus just a shallow, you know, mile wide type.
Did you find yourself writing down what you were going to say beforehand, before you recorded a video or an audio comment?
I did a couple times. Towards the end, I found that to be really beneficial, so I wasn't umming and aying and to make more use of that time. It kind of sounded like you did a time.
Yeah,
did
yeah,
you
a couple that, of times. I'm yes, awesome that you could tell. well, I don't. It was just I don't know, something about maybe it was the conversation and having kind of Rick and Becky, these people that are kind of held up in the conversation, that made me feel like I needed to kind of step up my game a little bit. And so, yeah, I did. I wrote down some comments. I don't know if they were necessarily better than the ones that came up off the top of my head, but it was something I hadn't planned on doing.
Cool. Any closing comments on VoiceThread there, Russ? You know, 5 stars recommend for everyone, or what do you think?
Yeah, the one thing that I need to spend more time on, and I believe you can talk to Kevin Jarrett about this. I maybe not. I don't know. But the accounts themselves, like they have K-12 accounts, and so they'll do things for you district wide, where it's like $1 per user or something like that. But if you don't do that, you have to. You would have your own account as the teacher, and you make identities underneath that that the students okay. would use. I'm thinking for me, from my sixth grade context, it would be a little confusing. It'll take some planning to get all my kids' accounts.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think definitely it's a great tool. I'm with you, Russ. It was one of those tools I'd always known about but never really dug deep into, so I'm glad I had the opportunity. Thanks to Bill Ferreter and the DeFores for hosting that conversation. Good stuff.
Do we need to mention here, too, that we were compensated? Might as well, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
Don't want the FCC coming after us or anything.
Yeah. We mentioned it in our blog. Yeah. Whatever. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's not like we got paid, you know, tons and tons of money.
Yeah, I won't be retiring.
Yeah. Put that, match that for my 401k or something. Who knows? All right. Let's see. Let's move on to two perspectives here. Sean, I just have to quote before we get started here. I got to quote. This is Sean Cornally's bio, his Twitter bio. Okay? It is, and I quote, "Toot toot, all aboard the standards-based grading express."
That's right.
I can hardly say that with a straight face.
That's right.
Here we go. Here we go. The hot topic of the night, standards-based grading. All right, Sean, I'm just gonna open up here with kind of the question everyone wants to know: can standards-based grading be done in all subjects? What do you think, sir?
Matt, first of all, I'd like to thank you for such a fantastic question. You know, I have to believe that it can. I know that. I guess I don't know it, but for me, standards-based grading originated in a math class. Mostly because math is so easily chunked into standards. You know, can a kid know this? Or can a kid do this with a parabola? Can a kid find this derivative? Yes or no? You know, and that's easily accessible or accessible. But in other rooms, I feel like you can actually break your content down into these standards in a much easier way. And it doesn't have to be the cookie cutter standards that everyone's so afraid of. It can be your standards for your room, but it really forces you to think about what it is you're making these kids learn, how it is you're giving them the opportunity to prove that they've worked on learning it. So to me, it's a philosophy, and the implementation of it is basically just details. And it comes down to the question, are you willing to admit that you're a gatekeeper and that's garbage? You know, shouldn't the kids be able to be rewarded for the work that they do in your room and getting better at learning something?
Wow. yeah.
Right on. I was going to say something while you... you made me think of something, Sean, and it's that philosophy aspect, that it's not necessarily what you do, but it's like why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is these PLCs that were in this DuFour model, which kind of ties back to the VoiceThread thing. We were already doing or we are already doing a lot of the things that you guys are advocating. Like, we're coming up, we're taking a big look at our standards and benchmarks as a language arts team, and then coming up with our essential learnings and trying to boil that down to, like, 6 to 8 essential learnings for the year. And it just kind of, it feels like it ties into kind of what you're saying, that it's this idea of figuring out what it is exactly that these kids need to, you know, demonstrate that they've gained an understanding of, and that that's what you get after.
Yeah, I think definitely that's a good point, Russ. You know, one of the things that I first thought, or that people that are kind of, some people that are anti-standards-based grading say, is that, oh, all we're doing is we're teaching these little skills, or we're creating like this cookie-cutter approach for teaching. But I think Sean's a great example of someone who uses the standards, but, you know, check out this guy's blog. There's no way he does the cookie cutter type approach of teaching it. Sean, tell us a little bit about how you've used standards-based grading and how basically you told me once it has, you know, kept your teaching career alive. Tell me about how it's changed the way your students interact with you and how you interact with your students and how it's changed the way you teach and the freedom you have to use so many different methods of teaching. Talk to us about how that happened in your classroom.
Yeah, it was a magical fall day, really. When a certain teacher walked into my room and asked me what my quizzes mean. And I replied to him that, you know what, I don't really know. I just remember from teacher school being told that I should give a quiz every once in a while. And I kind of came to the realization that that doesn't make any sense. I should be assessing students because I genuinely want to know what they know. You know, I sort of stumbled onto this idea of standards-based grading. I had no idea that it was already a movement. I had no idea that it was already this, you know, great new practice. But really my idea was, okay, I'm going to make this list of things that these kids should know. I'm going to give them the list. I'm going to make it my grade book so that when they look in there and see a 6 out of 10, that makes them mad. They say, oh, I have a D in, you know, products of functions. Oh, I hate having a D. I want to fix that. And so what that does for me is it says it actually like babysits the grades for me. So I have to stop thinking about it and it frees me to do whatever I want with my class time. And all I have to do is say to the kids, hey guys, I'm planning things that are going to hit at these specific standards. And, you know, you can participate in class and not everything's going to be graded anymore. But in the end, these controlled assessments that I'm going to give you, they're going to tell me whether you get it or not. And these are the things I expect you to get. And I've had, I would say, 99% positive response from students. And what it really gains me is this freedom of doing whatever I want in class, as long as I can tell the kids which standards it has to do with. So they're not asking me, well, how many points is it worth? How long should the paper be? How many slides on my PowerPoint? I just say, I don't know. Does it demonstrate to me your ability to ask a testable question? And then they just, you know, they shut up and do it. It's great.
Wow. Russ, you've kind of toyed with this idea. You know, I can remember your post about skills-based journaling, and I know you've talked to me a little bit about using standards-based grading in your portfolio and your language arts stuff. And I even saw that you commented on Sean's blog about maybe, you know, should we even be reporting numbers? What's your thoughts on what Sean's just said and how that might relate to your context as a language arts and social studies teacher?
It fits perfectly with my philosophy, just as a teacher, my own personal philosophy as a teacher, which is just this idea that these numbers are pretty arbitrary, and for, especially in writing and reading, you know, if a kid demonstrates a writing standard, it doesn't make much sense for me to turn that into a number or to take a rubric on an essay that a student wrote and just total it up and throw it in the grade book as 27 out of 30. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. And so one thing, Sean, that I was thinking while you were saying that is the biggest thing I've already done in my own classroom is to stop totaling rubrics. And I know that's something you wrote about in your language arts post. And that it's done the same thing that you just brought up, which is kids are now, they're still grade hungry, which I don't know, that's just, it's been beaten into them for so long in schools, but they're now focused on the individual skills, because it used to be that they would say, well, I got 27 out of 30, what can I do to raise my grade? Well, now it's, I got, you know, 4 out of 6 on my introduction, you know, on having a hook in my introduction. Well, How do I improve that? And so it's already like we're 6 or 7 steps ahead in the conversation when a kid comes to me versus where we used to be. And so they can go, and we're still having conversations. So now they'll come up to me and they'll say, well, I got 4 out of 6 on my introduction. What can I do? And I say, well, did you read the feedback that I gave you on your rubric? And so then they go back and do that. Oh. And then they come up to me and they say, they'll go, okay, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do blah, blah, blah to my introduction. And then they edit that and they revise that. They edit it on the blog, bring it back to me, and I check it. It's, yeah, it's working out pretty well, at least changing their mindsets. They're starting to hone in on the certain things in the essays that they aren't getting a handle on.
And that's the beauty of it, you know. That's all I've ever wanted in my classroom before I even knew this had a name. Is just I wanted kids to look at my quizzes and ask the question, hey, what don't I know? How can I fix that? And before, they would just shove the quiz at the bottom of their backpack and be like, oh, shucks, I better do better on the next quiz, which doesn't make any sense because that means they don't understand the material from the quiz at hand. So if it's, you know, if it builds, like in any class, that kid is just in serious trouble because they don't understand the stuff from day one, like writing an introduction. Oh, man, if you can't do that, no one's going to read the rest of your paper. So
right.
It just makes sense, I think.
Russ, what are the hurdles you hear from the teachers around you? Like, why isn't everyone jumping aboard the standards-based grading express? I just don't get it.
If you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, Matt, seriously, I probably would have had a good answer for you. But these last, Sean jokingly talked about the magical, you know, the magic of standards-based grading. But a week ago in our 6th grade language arts PLC meeting, we spent the whole 40 minutes talking about how we can quickly move to standards-based. And we are literally doing that next fall. We're starting with standards-based report cards for reading and writing. We're going to work on our common rubrics that everybody will be using. We're basically doing away with numbers. We're going to be using, I know you guys use some sort of like 1, 2, 3, 4, something like that, right? 1, 2, 3 and a half, 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sean uses it up okay. to 10, but I mean, yeah, whatever. So that's all.
The
all
point
immaturity.
Is that it's the same idea. We're just going to be using letters, so it would be like secure, developing, you know, that kind of stuff like that. And so, but it'll be on every writing and every reading. It'll just be, you know, all the kids will. It's basically a portfolio system where the kids are showing me artifacts. You know, here's the standard, and then I teach it to them. You know, how what it looks like. And then they can do whatever they need to do to show me that they've mastered it, that they're secure in that standard. And then we'll take that and put it up. Every kid's going to have an individual blog, and they're just going to turn that into a portfolio where they're showing off artifacts of how they've mastered each standard.
Wow. That's,
right. I mean, ideally, if that works out, it'll be... I told Becky we went to Menards tonight, and on the way home, I told her if everything works out the way it's supposed to or the way it is in my mind, I'm pretty sure I will have peaked in my 3rd year of teaching, and I'm not sure where else to go from there because this is like everything I want to do, and supposedly it's going to happen.
I think you move on to curriculum director after
wow.
that is what you do. If we have some time, I don't know if we're... how much time we've got allotted for this.
Yes.
But
yeah,
I just had a really interesting conversation with one of my computer programming classes today. And those classes consist basically of a complete cross-section of our student body. I have freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And today was our seniors' last day. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to have a little chit-chat with these guys about this grading system and how they feel about it. And I had students... yelling, getting excited, you know, sort of, you know, they jumped at this chance to be honest with me about, they wanted to tell me how much they enjoyed my class. And then it's a little bit, you know, almost like weird to have kids be that nice about your class. And so I almost like didn't believe them when they were first telling me these things. But they responded to me with things like, well, it's obvious that you care about the material that you want us to learn instead of us turning it in on time. And I said, well, what happens if you don't turn in something on time? And they said, well, it's either because we didn't do it or it's not good enough. And we know that you only care about content. Well, they didn't say the word content. You know, we only care about what we know. And so we know that if we turn it in late, at least it's going to show you what we know, and that's not going to damage us in our grade. You know, if the and a kid looked me right in the eye, the kind of kid that doesn't turn stuff in on time, and he goes, "You know what? I don't turn stuff in on time, but it's just hard for me to do that. And school isn't like my job." He looked me right in the face and says, "You know what? If I show up late to my grocery store, I'm going to get fired. If I show up late to your class, you have to let me in." And I was just like, yeah, man, this, you know, school isn't work. And so a lot of the fight against standards-based grading is from these people that, you know, often like to call themselves, you know, curmudgeon-y or things like that. And they, you know, they say things.
I think we call them curmudgeon-y.
Yeah, right? Whatever it is. You know, self-labeled is even scarier, right? But,
yeah.
You know, just these things like, well, you got to prepare them for the workplace. Well, no, I mean, capitalism does that for you. You know, the kids want money, so they get a job. They know exactly what it's like to work at Hy-Vee. And it just, you know, school is not about that. School is supposed to be about learning. And work is about making money. And I know, like, when you're a teacher, it's, you know, mixed together and all that. But I just, you know, I just can't buy this thing that, oh, if you aren't teaching like these kids are already in college or already have 9-to-5s, then you're not teaching them anything. No, that's garbage. You know, you're trying to teach these kids to write. They're in sixth grade. You know, make a sentence that makes sense. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, God, the more I read about it, the more I do it. How could you even go back? There's no possible way. There's just no possible way.
It's impossible.
You can go back to the old
I
way.
You know, I had a conversation with a kid, and he comes up to me. He goes, "Man, he didn't say man. He looked at me and says, "Hey, I would never be in here. I don't like math very much. But the fact that you're going to let me try this again and actually study it instead of just moving on," he goes, "I learned math real slow, and I hated every other math class. You know, and calculus is almost impossible for me. But the fact that I can do it at my own pace, really, and just kind of try and keep up with the lectures," like, he loved it. You know, and how could you go back when a kid tells you that? He's like, "I probably would have dropped at quarter." You know? Shoot.
Mm-hmm. So this is a conversation that Matt and I have attempted to have on multiple occasions. So what about those soft skills? I mean, what about... is it not... I mean... You know, you've got seniors, and I've got sixth graders, and there's all those kids in between. And so where does that, I mean, we call it responsibility because we're a positive behavior school, but a positive behavior support school. But, I mean, where does that kind of stuff of being on time and deadlines and, I mean, setting, is it about them setting their own deadlines or... Do you know what I'm asking? Like, when do they figure that stuff out?
That's hard.
I didn't. It took me until hey, there's days where I get to school and I'm like, I have an idea of what I want to do today, or what my lesson plan's going to look like, but, you know, my first hour prep is when I'm putting it together. I mean, I get it done on time, but, you know, I'm still not very good at that kind of thing. Is it based on individuals, or what do you think?
What you just said is the answer. Those of us that are, you know, I guess you could deem successful or at least not unsuccessful, you know, we have jobs. That we're, you know, look at the example of what you just said. You know, you come into work and sometimes you don't have your ducks all in a row. In fact, half the time the ducks are all going in every other direction. You have to just basically hopefully corral them in the morning. Like, I, you know, get into that situation and it's totally fine. The day happens. The school doesn't burn down. You know, but yet I expect my kids to turn in 55 outlines and do a check of their data to make sure they have this kind of standard deviation to make sure they're not wasting materials and yada, yada, yada. That kid's just trying to figure out what this lab is about or what their investigation is trying to figure out. And yet you're like making sure they're on the roadmap to, you know, nirvana here. And they don't even know where they're going. And
right.
So I think what you're saying is actually really important, that standards-based grading allows you this freedom. You know, you don't want to run a commune or anything, but I'm saying, like, the people don't – we have unreasonable expectations of our students, you know. And if you loosen up a little bit, what I've noticed is that the students respond with responsibility because you're saying, hey, show me you get these things. Do what it takes for you to get it. If that means 6 hours of homework, too bad for you. That stinks. If that means no homework and you totally get it, hey, man, you're lucky. You're that kind of kid. You've got that figured out. I mean, it's not like as soon as they graduate, they all become the same and we're lucky they we're so lucky that we taught them all to organize their notebook the same way. Thank God someone's going to grade them on that when they work at, you know, Procter & Gamble. Like, no. Some engineers are better engineers, or some engineers are smarter and their job is easier, and some engineers have to work their butts off to get the same report done. Life's not fair. I don't know. I haven't lesson planned in years, and I know some teachers that have to lesson plan every day. That's just the way they do their job. And what if, you know, if my principal walked into my room and said, hey, Sean, I'm going to need your lesson plans for the next 50 days to make sure that you're teaching all these standards, I'd probably quit. I couldn't even do it. So, I don't know. Matt, you talk about this all the time. Like, we have unreasonable expectations compared to what we actually do as teachers and as, you know, professionals.
Well, first of all, if the principal doesn't start doing that, your curriculum director is for sure going to be doing that. So, watch out. No, I'm kidding, of course. No, seriously, here's the scoop. Okay. Tonight, I've got quizzes to grade. If I don't get those graded by tomorrow, guess what? I'm going to get them graded for the next day.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is there are certain deadlines that have to take place. I stayed up late last night because seniors are done today. So I had to get certain things done because seniors were going to be done today. I stayed up late because I knew it had to happen. That was a deadline that was less than flexible. But I also know deadlines that aren't as flexible. And I try to, when I have time, I prioritize and make those things happen. When I don't, then I do something else. And when we have these ongoing deadlines for our kids, like you must complete all 20 problems of your math homework every single night, that's just pretty ridiculous. There's teachers in my school all the time that forget about staff meetings. They forget, like, what should I even bring to the staff meeting? They might even forget a pen to, if they're coming to an interview, to interview someone else.
It's happened.
There's all kinds of things that teachers forget and that we don't do as professionals, as educators, wherever it is. But at the same time, we expect perfection from our kids. You know, they don't bring it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't bring a pencil to class and you get -5 participation points. But you know what? If I forget my computer at home, I can somehow like not take attendance and just tell the office later on that day, and they're okay with it. You know. No one gives me a -50 because I forgot my computer at home and can't take attendance.
So what do you do? I don't know if you realize this, Sean. I'm a second-year teacher. This is my first classroom. Like, what do you do? Kid comes to class unprepared. What do you do?
That kid has to deal with the repercussions of that. I have a student who I'm thinking of right now that we're having this conversation who, you know, he's toeing the line here for me, and he's really, you know, he's pushing my traditional teacher buttons. He shows up for class late every single day. And it's his first block class. It's at 8:20 in the morning, which is, you know, ludicrously early for most teenagers. And, you know, and I just have to laugh at him. I'm like, I've been up since 5:30, bro. Like, give me a break. But, you know, teenagers are just in a different spot. And he comes in, waltzes in 5-10 minutes late every day. But you know what he does? He sits down at a computer. He logs on to his server account. And he gets to work. He asks fantastic questions. He's thinking, he wants to do his own projects and write his own requirements and just be self-motivated. And I ask him, like, hey, man, why are you late? And he just looks at me and gives me one of those answers, like, you know, he looks at me and just says, hey, you can't really understand why I'm late. Like, I just have this feeling that he has a home life that perhaps isn't as stable as you'd want for every kid. And who am I to say, hey, man, you're a perfect student, but I'm going to destroy your grade because you're not coming to class. You're missing the first 5 minutes. You know, think about, to that kid, does that 5 minutes get him anything? No, it's me talking to the kids about whatever it is I feel like talking about, or taking attendance on the computer, or listening to the announcements that he doesn't feel connected to for some reason. And I know this is, you know, the traditional.
And now, I'm not pointing fingers at you for once this time, Sean, but look at the staff members in our school that show up 5 or 10 minutes late to staff meetings.
How many times have they been fired?
You know what I'm saying?
And exactly. Okay, Matt, one thing. I mean, someone's going to listen to this and be like, oh my God, Sean Cornelli has dreadlocks and plays the acoustic guitar for a living, right? And not that I don't like our reggae friends, but I'm just saying, I'm not trying to promote irresponsibility and just, you know, the get it done no matter what, whenever, man. Like, I'm not trying to promote that. What I'm saying here is that people screw up all the time. And when you pretend that the school is this perfect environment where kids can't screw up ever and you can't cut them a little slack, That just breeds this weird teacher-student controversy or adversarial relationship that people feel. You know, I mean, how many songs out there are about, you know, school's out for the summer, or like teacher smells. I mean, like, why do you think that is? It's because teachers act ridiculous. Like, you're late every day, probably because you have to take your brother to school and make sure he eats breakfast because something's messed up at home. I'm mad at you. Yeah, cool. What's that?
I mean, Sean, we gotta admit, we do teach in a little slice of utopia. Absolutely. When it comes to schooling. So we do teach in a great school. I think Russ teaches in a great school district, great mm-hmm. school as well. But I think one of the biggest things that I've learned throughout this whole change in my standards-based grading and everything, it's part of it is the standards-based grading, but the real part of it is the relationships. Folks, if you're listening right now, don't think that Sean Cornally has like this distant approach with the students, like, you can't talk to me. You get down real with them and you talk to them like, hey, I'm a teacher, you're a student, but at the same time, we're in this together to like help, you know, I want you to learn, you want to learn, we want to learn together. That's the whole part of this whole process. Standards-based grading is yet another mechanism that puts you on that puts the student on a more realistic playing field so that you can help them see that you want them to succeed. You talk to them like they're a real human being, you assess them like they're a real human being, and you just treat them like they're a real human being versus put them in some sort of robotic fashion known as traditional schooling. That to me is the deal breaker. When you change that in your classroom, then everything else just,
yeah, when they see you as there. A human and they see that you're just trying to get a job done, it changes everything. And standards-based grading, like I said before, it becomes the babysitter of my grades. You know, I don't have to sit there and say, oh my gosh, where is Johnny at with his writing? Like, it's right there in the grade book, and it's perfectly, you know, broken up. The kid can totally tell what's going on. And so I can actually be free to talk to him and be like, hey, man, you know, I looked in the grade book and I saw that, you know, this specific skill isn't quite up to par. You know what? You know, and I can ask him a really good question about it. And he can tell that I'm using this, you know, grades to actually help him and assess him. And they're not damning him, or they're not, you know, gatekeeping him out of the garden of knowledge. Like, it just... You know, it just helps those relationships develop a lot better. And, you know, we do live in have a utopian school almost. We're all, you know, almost all of our kids are above our own average, which is statistically impossible, but yet happening. And
we don't have Lake Wilmington.
We really do have Lake McBride, you know? When I asked who had a sailboat, more hands than not went up. Just going to point that out.
Well, I think one thing I want to point out too is, and I don't even know if you're doing this on purpose or not, Sean, but I love it because you talk about the grade book. It's not even your grade book. It's almost something that you and this, it sounds like it's something you and the students go to together. It's not something that like you're here, you know, it's locked in your drawer and they have to have the password to get to it. It's just, it's there. It's a book that tells where they are, and that's it. Like, that's where it begins and ends.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit nervous to say what I'm about to say. But at the beginning of the year, I ask all the kids if they care if the other kids see some of their grades accidentally. And I'll let kids thumb through the gradebook on their own. Like, I'll just have it on my computer and I'll say, hey, this is about you learning. If you're the kind of kid that's going to be deceitful and change a grade, I have this backed up on a MySQL database on my server. So, like, don't do that. I'm going to catch it. But, you know, otherwise, sit down at the computer, find out what it is you don't know, get on PowerSchool, check what it is you don't know, thumb through there, you know, go back and visit the topics that were hard for you. And so, yeah, it really becomes this, you know, like, map that we're both kind of writing together, like you said. I never really thought about it that way, but it works out pretty well, and it becomes not a part of me. It becomes theirs and ours, which works out great.
Let's put a wrap on this portion of the podcast. Russ, Sean, any last-minute thoughts on standards-based grading?
Oh, sorry, Russ. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm just excited to re-listen to this. I am just pumped to be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, the one thing I'd like to say about SBG, which, you know, as we call it in the biz, is that it saved my career. I was honestly at the end of last year, I was going to quit. You know, I was going to be a software developer and, you know, make bank writing PHP code, and not really. If you get that joke, you're nerdier than me, but like, I had these, you know, realizations about what learning could be and what a building, you know, a room could be like, and how lessons don't have to be generated by me. You know, like I said, I haven't lesson planned in 2 years, and that's because I let the kids help me do it. And like I said, we're not smoking pot in class. We're, you know, I have these things that I want them to learn, really intense things that are, you know, college level physics, and we're hitting those things and we're doing it. And as I say, if you're listening to this and you're thinking standards-based grading, you're on the fence, or you want to try some partial implementation, like, no, partial implementation is, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's ridiculous. It's binary. You're either going to do it or you're not. And I would encourage you just to jump the fence, you know, join the SBG Express. There's always room. The coach car is free. It costs a little money to upgrade to first class, but... You know, feel free to get on SeanCornally.com. That's Sean with an H and a W. And shoot me an email. Ask me for questions. I don't want to be famous for this. I don't want a million people to read my blog. I just want school to stop being so boring for kids. That's all.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to listen to this one over again.
What, though? Honestly, it seems like that's... I don't know what draws us to... standards-based grading. What is it about the mentality? Because that last, very last part that you said, that's the same thing. That's the same thing I say to myself every day when I go to school, when I leave school. I just don't want school to be so boring for kids. I don't want my students to hate school. And I don't know why standards-based grading is what changes that, but I don't know. It's weird. Because that's, yeah, took the words right out of my mouth. I just want my kids to enjoy coming to school. I don't want it to be... I don't want them to worry about their grades and what their parents are going to say about their a B minus and not knowing what that means. And I just want it. I don't want it to be so confusing and so worrisome. I don't know.
Yuck. All right. Let's go to our final segment of the podcast, the 3-minute gut check. Russ, do you have the official with students in mind
timer ready to go? Here. Hold on. Okay, online stopwatch. There we go.
All right. Sean, are you getting nervous
yet? I'm always
nervous,
man.
our last guest, Eric, he was a bit nervous at this point in the podcast. I think he was.
Can we edit it out if I swear?
It's just we can bleep it.
We can bleep
it. Bleep, Matt?
Can we use an awesome bleep, like a duck quack or something?
There we go.
Yeah. I'm hoping everything's... My mic levels are acting weird because of Skype. So I'm wondering what's... I think the audio will be all right.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah, we're all right. All right, Russ, you got the timer ready. You are going to ask Sean first. 3 minutes to answer the question.
The clock will begin when I say the last question mark. Okay, so Sean is... And you may have touched on this a little earlier, but whatever, go with it. Is standards-based grading an end... Or is it a means to an end? Why numbers and not words? Why grades? Why grades at all? Why not just some sort of progress report listing the standards and where the kids are with that? Why does it have to turn into some sort of grade at the end?
Russ, that's fantastic. in my, you know, absolutely, totally unexpert opinion, why numbers? That's a great question. And the answer is, you know, it's kind of a lame answer, is that that's how, in the end, I have to report my student achievement. You know, would it be this beautiful world, or could it be this beautiful world where every college calls me and asks me how Johnny, you know, is? You know, oh, I saw he took advanced calculus. How do you feel about his mathematical ability? You know, and then I could give them a 20-minute diatribe about Johnny and how he was fantastic, but his work ethic's a little poor and he needs algebra remediation, you know, but yada, yada, yada. But that's just not the case. You know, there's too many kids, there's too many colleges, there's too many, you know, there's too much information to actually aggregate about a student. And so, I feel like maybe the numbers are just the system we've adopted, but they're perhaps a necessary evil. And so I guess, you know, without trying to rock the boat too hard, I want to just destroy the system from the inside out and say, hey, if this is the system I got to deal with, I'm going to make it work for my kids. So, you know, does it work where I could just say, hey, you know what? Here's the standard for F equals MA. You're proficient, which is what you sounded like you were going to do. with your English stuff, which I think is fantastic. You know, switch to these more descriptive words. You know, that'd be fantastic. But in the end, I feel like I have to aggregate their scores and report it out to my principal, or at least to go on their transcript, or at least to go to my counselor, which is a really poor reason to have to give somebody a number. The way to get around this is feedback. You start off at the beginning, and you give an assessment that the kids are used to being graded, and you say to them, hey, this is, you know, this is like a quiz, but I'm not actually going to grade it. I'm just going to write and tell you what you did, how you behaved on this assessment, how I would have graded you, even maybe. You know, what can we learn from that? What can we take through the next lessons to the point where we actually do an SBG-style assessment? That way the kid knows where they're at. They don't feel like I'm just throwing them in the deep end and, oh, you can't swim? Ha ha, you drowned. Oh my gosh, too bad. Like, so, I don't know. Grades are words. I feel like in the end, it's your job to assess. That's what they're paying you for. As a teacher. And so whether I use grades or words, I feel like it's kind of arbitrary, but you should choose the one that your students respond to the best. And in the end, that's all that matters.
Well done with 15 wow. seconds to spare.
Thank you.
Wow. That's great. That's great. Well, we'll give Sean 30 seconds or so here to think. Sean, you're up next to ask me a question. It doesn't have to relate to standards-based grading, just anything off the whim that somehow relates to students' education, anything in there. I'm a little bit nervous. I teach next door to you, and we have some of these conversations regularly, but usually we've got more than 3 minutes to kind of go to mull over it. So I'm kind of nervous right now, whatever you're coming up with. I feel like I should know all these questions you're going to ask me, but
I think you'll recognize
that's
them.
That's the way it is.
Usually this ends up with Matt and I talking from about 3:30 till 5. And then Matt picking up his lunchbox oh so nonchalantly and walking me out the door while I'm still talking. But or the other way around, you know, whichever one, whoever has to, like, not get in trouble that
yep.
night. But here's my question, Matt. You ready?
Yes.
So it's, you know, it's sort of related to SBG, but I want to see where you take this. In general, the math curriculum is done to students. That is, they have no idea what is coming next or what equation. And they really see it as a disjointed, you know, zoo of random equations, random facts, you know, created by dead white people. How do you deal with this stereotype of math, specifically in geometry and statistics?
Oh, wow. I have to say that this is my sixth year teaching math, and I'd say for about the first 3 or 3.5 years, I tried to ignore this question. I really did. I really just tried to come up with great story problems. I tried to come up with some great activities, you know, that were educationally sound, you know, like a constructivist approach to having kids discover some formula or theorem or something like that. But what I found is that all of my lessons, all of my ideas, everything just like you're alluding to with your elaborate description of secondary, especially math education, secondary math curriculum, is that it all lacked context. And I don't pride myself in being a real creative person. I'm not someone that just has all kinds of creative ideas and how to do math, if you will. But I found out that life has an awful lot of stories. And you know, think back to your pre-service education or whatever it is, you know, graduate school for you, Sean, and all that stuff, when you learned about the old, like, Madeline Hunter lesson plan. And there was that thing at the beginning called the anticipatory set. I used to just really dislike the anticipatory set. I really just had this idea in my mind that students should want to do whatever it is on their own. I quickly learned that that wasn't the case, especially when it comes to math. So I decided to try to overcome it by, I'll admit it, just telling stories. I would tell stories about how I was putting in new windows and that somehow related to parallel lines in geometry just to get the kids' attention. I don't think I've done a very good job, or at least as good a job as you, Sean, as getting the students to actually do the math, but I think I've been able to help them get interested in whatever I'm talking about for the day and help them see a possible real-world application by coming down to their level and at least presenting some sort of scenario where the particular idea we're talking about that day relates. My wife, she's got this espresso machine. We can make, like, you know, full-fledged coffee shop lattes in our house. You wouldn't believe the number of great stories that have come out of making lattes and things like that that somehow have managed to relate to geometry and statistics. things like, you know, Russ talked about going to Menards. You talk about going there, and all of a sudden, there's all kinds of great stories that can at least hook kids and get interested in what you're talking about. So I really don't think that the answer itself lies from within changing the math curriculum itself. I don't really think that there's a way we can do that. You know, just like we can't necessarily get away from numbers in our school, maybe in some schools that can happen. Maybe in some schools the math curriculum could change, but in our particular context, we can't get rid of that. So instead, create, just as with standards-based grading, I believe the answer is with relationships. Create this environment where kids are just coming to you, like wanting you to tell stories. They're so stinking hooked. They're like, tell us a story. Tell us a story today, because you always do that, Mr. Townsley. And then the next thing you know it, you're talking about whatever it is you're supposed to talk about related to math. And then the kids are like, okay, we had 10 minutes of story time, 5 minutes of story time. I'm hooked. Let's do whatever the heck Townsley wants us to do today, because it relates to whatever the heck they're doing. That 3 minutes went faster than I thought.
All right. Mm.
Yeah, relationships. That's about the only way I can describe it. Yeah, it's a tough one, though. Good question, by the way. Good question. If I had the answer to that, I'd probably write a book about it and quit curriculum directing already.
Oh, don't do that.
All right, Russ, our final 3-minute gut check question for you. Okay. PLCs. I've talked to you a little bit about PLCs. We've talked about some of the DeFore books and so forth. PLCs, are they a fad? PLCs, what do you see the future of your school? PLCs, is it something for every school? PLCs, does it really benefit students? This podcast is with students in mind. PLCs, should we just chalk up PLCs as being one of those $5 education words we'll laugh at 10 years from now? 3 minutes, let's hear it.
Okay, when I first started at my school, PLCs were just kind of this thing that I felt like was just the thing that's different about my school that's, you know, okay. Every school's got their thing. And it was really tough because this current year, we have, like, in my sixth grade, I'm in a big school comparatively, and in my sixth grade, we have 14 different language arts teachers just in sixth grade. So we have 14 sixth grade language arts teachers. So you can about imagine when we have our PLC meeting and it's 40 minutes and there's 14 of us that it's a little chaotic and not a ton gets done. It's just too many people to be productive. And so I'm really looking forward to next year. There will be 4 of us in sixth grade, so we're going from 14 to 4. And the 4 of us are really on the same page with a lot of this stuff. As far as like assessment goes, we're really, like we are, again, we're just on the same page. We know where we want to go. We have ideas that we want to implement together. And so to me, that's where PLCs really work, is when you have people that have bought in together and are working toward this common goal. And I think that common goal is student learning. And for me, it was at the beginning, I don't know how excited I was about it, because it just kind of sounded like a lot of like data collection that I wasn't very, I just didn't really get it, how that would help kids and how that would help us. And what I'm really realizing is that the more we can be doing, and this kind of comes from that conversation we had on the VoiceThread this past week, Matt, is that having these PLCs and having these common goals and common assessments relieves the stress from having to do all the interventions and do all the differentiating myself, and it turns it into this team concept where we're working together to create assessments. And the reason we're doing that is so that everyone is getting we're all getting valid data from these assessments, and then we can compare it and just find out, you know, well, my kids bombed this. What are you doing that your kids really got it that I can take from you to help my kids, and vice versa? You know, my kids really did well, and this is what I did, so maybe you can learn from this. And it's this idea of kind of checking your ego at the door and working together as a team that I really do. I don't know. I really like it. I think I'm on basically 2 PLCs. One is my color team, which is all the different content areas, so math, science, social studies, and language arts. And the other one is just my language arts team. And so they both...
And your time is up.
They both do different
Nice
they
work.
Both kind of serve different wow. purposes, but awesome. I don't know. I really appreciate them as a young teacher, especially. It's they're.
That's a tough. It's the toughest part of the podcast, no doubt about it. Toughest part.
I dig it.
All right, final thoughts, Sean. Any final thoughts? This was your debut on With Students in Mind. Any final thoughts on the podcast? Standards-based grading or anything we've talked about, or just anything you wanted to add here while you're on the air?
Yeah, well, one, I really appreciate being asked to do this. I just sort of entered this online community 2 months ago, and so I really appreciate the reception and kind of being asked to do this. And what I really appreciate is that there are educators out there, like, you know, the whole Townsley family clan and all of that, that are really actually genuinely interested in education and making this better for students. And as far as SBG goes, is it a trend? Is it just another piece of edu jargon that you're going to replace with another edu jargon word 10 years from now? Yeah, probably. But the central core ideas are that, you know, things shouldn't be obfuscated behind points. Kids should know what they're supposed to learn, and it should be clear, and it should be a team thing, and it shouldn't be this game where you provide a random quiz and then there's a random test and the test for some reason is worth more even though that kid hasn't had a chance to get better. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, why are you playing these games with kids? If you really want them to learn, help them learn and stop screwing around. If you want to be a gatekeeper, I don't know, go keep a gate. go don't let people into your garden for a living. Like, that sounds like what a lot of people want to do. Yeah, and I appreciate, you know, whoever's listening to this. Like, I appreciate all the comments on the blog. I appreciate all the hits and all the positive feedback. It's been really fantastic. And, you know, having a group of people out there to learn from and bounce ideas off of that are like-minded but yet diverse enough, really, you know, you can't get that in your building, no matter how big your building is. You know, this is the beauty of the internet. And, you know, I just really appreciate it, and I'm in awe, and my kids are benefiting from it. So, hey, what more can I ask for?
Right on. Russ, last comments, final thoughts.
I can't wait to listen to it. I just learned so much from you guys, and I'm really glad we had you on, Sean.
Thanks.
Right on. My last comment is, I think standards-based grading, I truly wish I had another year or two in the classroom. And I know that's going to sound ridiculous because I chose to interview for the job and all that stuff. But I really think that there's a lot of tweaking that can take place even within the standards-based grading kind of arena. You know, that's why there's so many people that comment on Sean's blog or my blog. There are plenty of people that are there that are asking questions because they're not sure if they want to jump the fence yet. But there's also equally a number of people that are already doing it that question why you're doing that specific aspect of it. And I think that's also the value, is that you can help other people jump on board, but you can also work kind of with each other in this online learning community where you can say, hey, why are you doing that? Here's what I'm doing. And having your own standards-based grading system kind of evolve as a result of that virtual conversation. I really appreciate that. And I hope that those that are out there listening to this podcast appreciate that as well and will jump aboard all the blogs and tweets and all that stuff. That pretty much puts a wrap on episode 5 here. In case you're not following us on Twitter yet, you can follow us on @withstudentsim. We also have our website, withstudentsinmind.blogspot.com. We're also now available on iTunes. You can search for us on iTunes, and you can subscribe to us there to sync up with your iPod or whatever the heck you listen to podcasts on. Thanks again for tuning in. For Russ, Sean, and myself, it's been a pleasure. And we're all going to say this together. It's here we are. We are here.
With students in mind.
Students in mind.
Have a good one, everybody.